Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shivate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namane. Namaste Sarasate Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pastyatya Desatarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaurabhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Everybody's out shopping? Honoring prasadam, right, okay. So we'll begin. We left off from the morning session. We had a little technical difficulty, but we figured out how to do it for the next time. With chapter 7. The entire picture, chapter 7, was the second set of Prahlad's teachings to his classmates. We began with the first 10 verses of chapter 8, which was Chanda and Amarka coming to understand somewhere in between those two. Could you somewhere in between those two with the lights. Somewhere between where it was and where it is now. Okay. I'm fine like that. When Hiranyakashipu heard from Chanda and Amarka what had happened in the classroom, the influence that his son was having on the other children in the classroom, he flew into a rage, and rather than having other people try to kill Prahlad, he ran with his sword raised to kill Prahlad. So the exchange between the two, Hiranyakashipu was asking, where do you get your power? And Prahlad saying, from the source of all power, the source of everything, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Give up your friend and enemies consciousness and become a nice devotee of Vishnu. So that's where we ended, and that was chapter 8, text 10. The rest of the chapter is what we heard the very first evening, so it's from that chapter 8. The Lord Nrisingadev coming out of the pillar, big battle between Hiranyakashipu and Lord Nrisingadev. Nrisingadev plays with him. Finally, Nrisingadev finishes him in a manner that upheld the words of Brahma, because Krishna does that, or the Supreme Personality of God, it upholds the word of his devotee. And then the other soldiers of Hiranyakashipu, they were finished. The demigods, chapter 8, came forward and offered many, many, many different prayers with the hope of pacifying Lord Nrisingadev. And it didn't happen. And that's where the chapter 8 concludes. So chapter 9 is really long. And so I was imagining I would be able to cover chapter 9 this evening, but it's too long. So I'm going through, as you see here, up to verse 42. Tomorrow morning we'll start with 43 through 45, and then Krishna is merciful. We'll cover the first 10 verses of chapter 10, and we'll wrap things up tomorrow. That's the exchange that we didn't hear between Prahlad and Lord Nrsimhadev. Because of being immersed for quite some time in this topic, the teachings of Prahlad, it's really natural and easy to note how his prayers to Lord Nrsimhadev are on those same themes as his teachings. They're devotional teachings, and there's elements of devotion because, as he says in chapter 10, the Lord sent him to this world to teach and show by example the way of devotional service, pure devotional service. So these prayers, I broke into sections as much as possible, and there are themes that are within his teachings that are within his prayers. The teachings, he was speaking like a teacher to his friends and, you know, respectfully to his Shanda and Amarka and to his father. But, you know, an acharya speaking to his audience. And now it's to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the mood is again and again and again, total humility, but it's along the theme. As we saw several times earlier during the seminar, that little introductory remark from chapter 6. By taking shelter of the lotus feet of Prahlad Maharaj, one can learn the mode of devotional service. And one who adopts this mode of devotional service, there is no material prerequisite. There's no material requirement before taking up devotional service and coming to pure devotional service. And it's within his prayers. We'll see. So these themes will emerge. The first 8 verses are his approach to Lord Nrsimhadev by the urging of the demigods, because the demigods tried, they couldn't pacify, they urged, specifically Lord Brahma and the other demigods, they urged him. The demigods, headed by Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and other great demigods, dared not come forward, because that Lord at that time was extremely angry. Manyu so rambam. Even sounds angry. So we heard last seminar about the transcendental nature of the Lord and the transcendental nature of his anger and everything that's within him, because everything is within him. He's the source of everything. And his anger is also transcendental. Then we heard about Lakshmi, where she was feeling mahad adbhutam. She was feeling astonished at such a wonderful and extraordinary form that because of the demigod's fear, they couldn't approach, and she wouldn't because she had never seen such a wonderful form. So she was in this mahad adbhutam mood or emotion. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, she actually had seen that form in a previous kalpa, previous cycle of yugas, and Lord Nrisimhadeva manifests that form in Vaikuntha. She's the goddess of fortune in Vaikuntha. The impression having not seen was induced by the Lord's Leela Shakti so that she and the others could experience this adbhuta rasa, or astonishment, secondary rasa to enhance primary rasa. It's a nice point. So, obedient, Prahlad went forward. And although Lord Nrisimhadeva was extremely angry, he was requested by Lord Brahma to go forward, make his best effort. And so Prahlad went before Lord Nrisimhadeva. And in the verse, there are these words, Kripaya Pariplutaha. Whoever is in charge of that child can do something, please. It describes the ecstatic mood, afflicted in ecstasy, the mood of Lord Nrisimhadeva, just to see Prahlad. And he, karam bhujam, he placed his lotus hand, kritta abhayam, that is, creates fearlessness. So he placed his hand on Prahlad's head, as you see in the painting. When Lord Nrisimhadeva saw the small boy Prahlad prostrated at the soles of his lotus feet, he became most ecstatic in affection toward his devotee. The anger went down. Raising Prahlad, the Lord placed his lotus hand upon the boy's head. He has a purpose to create fearlessness. And he was already fearless, but now he went more than fearless. He felt completely freed from all material contamination, all material desires. He was already there anyway, but perfectly. And being transcendentally situated, ecstatic symptoms erupted on his body, his heart filled with love, his eyes with tears, and the personality of Godhead entered completely within his heart, although he was standing there before him. And manasa susamahita means he was in trance, fixed, like a yogi in trance, full attention and complete trance, fixed mind. In this ecstatic mood began, that's the condition of his mood, of his prayers. Important purport, message. Prabhupada speaks about this stage of samadhi. It's right in Bhagavad Gita and it's right in the Bhagavatam, 12th canto. There's 10 topics of the Bhagavatam. One of them is liberation. And in that state of liberation, there's this stage of trance or being fixed upon the Supreme. And the Bhagavatam's explanation is, one attains yogic perfection when he's freed from all diversions and his mind is fixed upon the lotus feet of the Lord. That's for the devotee, samadhi. It's beyond, in short, it's beyond this Brahma Nirvana. It's beyond Nirvana, Brahman realization. It's in the realm of transcendence. He's in his material body, but conscious on the spiritual form platform. That's pretty unique. It's possible. There's other examples in our Vaishnava literature of that as well. But he was in this extremely elevated state of consciousness, and he's feeling, he's expressing, how is it possible? Here's my disqualifications. I don't have qualifications. I have disqualifications. The demigods, they have qualifications. They praised you in streams of excellent words, and that didn't satisfy you. So how is it going to work for me? I'm not at all qualified. There's the demigods in the upper left corner. His first expression is one of humility. He's most eminently qualified, and one of those qualifications is humility. So no material qualification needed for bhakti. You need association of a bhakta to receive bhakti, but material qualification is not needed. That's what this little section is, going from 9 to 12. He makes reference to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who delivered Gajendra, and he wasn't even in a human body. So it's your nature, you're kind upon those who even have no material qualification. It must be that some bhakti, that's the power of, it's glorification of bhakti, and the glorification Lord, moved by bhakti and his bhakta. And he accounts to Narada, this little tiny bhakti that I have, that's Narada's mercy. So I'm than that of a brahmana who is expert in all 12 qualifications. Why? Such a devotee can purify his entire family, whereas the brahmana can't even purify himself. Purify, now this is in this transcendental sense, because there's certainly the mode of goodness sense. But the Bhagavatam is addressing from that transcendental position, the shuddha sattva, that kind of purification. So a dog eater has to give up some habits like dog eating, but because the bhakti process is so powerful, if he stays with that sincere execution of bhakti, like Magari the hunter, he'll give up the hunting program and become a devotee. Or the prostitute and give up her profession and become Haridas Thakur's follower, chanting the holy name like him. And Jaghai and Madhai, etc. Material qualification not required in advance. Taking shelter in bhakti and the association of the Lord's bhaktas can elevate one beyond those qualifications. We had this question during the question and answer session about one of Bhagavad Gita verses. I don't need to repeat that. The Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always satisfied in himself. Therefore, when something is offered to him, the offering by the Lord's mercy is for the benefit of the devotee. For the Lord doesn't need service from anyone. Very important point. The offerings and the service that's rendered to the Supreme Lord is for the benefit of the devotee. He's kind, he'll accept that he doesn't need anything. He's kind, he'll accept that service and engage in loving exchange with the devotee. He gives this example of decorating one's face, and it's like seeing, you know, the mirror reflection in the mirror. It looks like the mirror reflection is being decorated, but it's actually one's own face is being decorated. Prabhupada's example is making offerings to the deity. We want to make very nice offerings to the deity. And by doing so, it decorates the devotee. yes, the deity is being decorated, but the real decoration is the decoration of the devotee with nice qualities and so forth, and happiness and contentment and those kinds of decorations. So that's the second section. No material qualification as a prerequisite for bhakti. Now, more, because it was touched upon already, the hand of the Supreme Lord creates fearlessness. So it's a topic in bhakti, fear and fearlessness. It's described in multiple places. Here it is. There's several verses in a row. Five verses. The appearance of the Lord is very fierce or fearsome. Your appearance in this fearsome form is your pastime for your pleasure. Because remember, he was requested to have the anger of the Lord subside by his prayer, so he's saying this form of anger, fierce form, is for your pleasure. Such an incarnation is always meant for the protection and improvement of the universe. Protect the devotee. Anyone who has been forced by ignorance to enter the material world may be purified of material life if he offers prayers and hears his glories. It's an opportunity for us to do what we're doing right now, to purify ourselves by hearing his pastimes and his glories and the glorification of him. He appears for such reasons. My dear Lord Nrisingadeva, please, therefore, cease your anger now that my father, the great demon Hiranyakashipu, has been killed. Your anger was meant for him, and he's gone, so please withdraw your anger. Even saintly persons take pleasure in the killing of a scorpion or a snake. All the worlds have achieved great satisfaction because of the death of this demon. Now, these saintly persons are confident in their happiness, and they will always remember your auspicious incarnation in order to be free from fear. So there's a statement about why the Lord appeared, why he's exhibiting anger, and who is it meant for? It's meant for Lord Nrisingadeva, it's meant for Hiranyakashipu, but it's for the protection of the devotees and for they're coming to the place of fearlessness. In his purport, Prabhupada explains, just by remembering the form of Nrisingadeva when danger arises, fearlessness is felt, and therefore this feature of the Supreme Lord is not at all inauspicious. Speaking to the Lord, Lord Nrisingadeva, I do not fear your sharp, pinching teeth, your garland of intestines, your mane soaked with blood, your high, wedge-like ears. Nor do I fear your tumultuous roaring. Which makes elephants flee to distant places, or your nails, which are meant for to kill your enemies. Certainly very fierce looking. Red eyes, roaring sound, etc. These are meant for Hiranyakashipu, not for your devotee. Prabhupada explains, just like a lioness with her cubs, they're not afraid of the lion or the lioness. The fish in the water, in the sea, it's for other living entities that are not aquatics, it's very dangerous. But even the small fish, they're unafraid. It's their natural habitat. A big elephant, maybe taken away by the river, but the fish just swim and they're very fine. So we, the devotees, are just fine seeing this form. We have no fear of you. Although the Lord sometimes assumes a fierce appearance to kill the Duskritis, the devotees worship him. Important. So what am I afraid of? I am very much afraid of my condition of life within this material world. I'm not afraid of self outside. I'm afraid of the whole of material existence. When will that moment come when you will call me to the shelter of your lotus feet, which are the ultimate goal for liberation for conditioned souls? The position of fearlessness is the place of shelter. Very simple. Like the lioness with the cub, or like the fish in the sea, or like a small child in the arms of mother. They're feeling safe. The devotee at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, they're fearless. Now, there's cause for fear that has already happened with Prahlad, but he remained fearless. His father was puzzled. Why are you not afraid? Everyone else is afraid, except you. Means you've got some power. You have some power that you think is greater than my power, and so you're not afraid. What's that power? I'm doing an overview. All of these points were discussed in detail and detail and detail, so maybe it'll be impetus to go back and hear the recordings again or read this section again. So I feel a little bad that just doing such a quick gloss, but having heard what we heard with some amount of detail on his teachings, I think there's some appreciation of his prayer, further appreciation of his prayers. Now he taught to his student friends that bhakti can carry one beyond this material attachment. So now it's within his prayers also. The ocean of nescience can be crossed by bhakti. And the alternative of trying to cross the place of difficulty or improve oneself without bhakti, it's ineffective and impermanent. So his glorification in throughout these prayers and throughout the teachings is bhakti. Because that's who he is. He's a pure bhakti, pure bhakta, and teaching it by his example and by his words. So he glorifies the creeper of bhakti. Of course, in his case, it originated from Narada Muni. But this bhakti creeper gives one relief from material qualities, the crushing wheel of time that can't be conquered by anyone. I am being crushed by the wheel of time, and therefore I surrender fully unto you. Now kindly take me under the protection of your lotus feet. So, submission. He's already there. Literally, he's at the Lord's feet. And literally the Lord is feeling affection for him. Nonetheless, he's expressing, please accept me. Please accept me as your servant. Please accept me as your devoted soul. He's anticipating, next section, that the Lord will want to give him benediction because it's the Lord's nature. And he's declaring in advance, no, thank you. My father who was so powerful has now been vanquished by you within a moment. So don't give me his opulence, please, his position, please, or any of those things, please. Mystic powers, no thank you. In a flash, it's all gone. It's quite impermanent. No real happiness, because he's already explained it to his friends. The realm of happiness and distress, duality, is not for me, thank you. So please don't offer such things. And the different categories, bhukti, sense enjoyment, mukti, going beyond sense enjoyment into the realm of liberation, Brahman realization, and mystic siddhis by austere practices of the yogis may develop some mystic powers, but it's also material. So please don't offer benedictions of something material. We're going to hear it again tomorrow morning in the beginning of chapter 10. But since life is temporary, don't give me something temporary. So it's advice to us also. There are things that we require, and you accept those things that you require more than what you require. You don't require. And success and happiness is not acquiring more than you require. Same as what he said to his friends, or to Hiranyakashipu. Why busy oneself gathering so much and creating and inventing and producing and goods and services of so many unnecessary paraphernalias? It's an impediment on the path of human life. Here's a verse that really doesn't fit in a cluster. Again, he mentions this Padma Kara Prasad, this benediction, as you see in the painting here, that Lord Nrisingadev placed his hand upon his head, a benediction that is so very, very special. We have material bodies, the so-called material bodies of devotees who fully engage in devotional service of the Lord, being constantly in the fire of spiritual life, have nothing to do with matter, but are spiritualized. Another very important teaching that he understands by the mercy of Narada Muni, and that is, you engage something in bhakti yoga, in connection with the personality of Godhead, and so the senses become spiritualized, the mind becomes spiritualized, objects become spiritualized, intelligence becomes spiritualized. That which is of this material realm becomes spiritualized. The common example that Prabhupada would give is iron in fire. Somehow I have this iron cannonballs in fire, and they become fire. Literally, they act like and give heat and light and can burn, although they're iron. So similarly, being constantly in the fire of spiritual life, everything becomes spiritualized, including material bodies. It's not a justification, it's the mercy of the bhakti process that makes it possible that although we're in the realm of the temporary and duality, we can engage those things in service to Krishna because they're connected to Krishna. We'll hear that twice in the course of these prayers by Prahlad. He's highly learned it. He's just 5 years old, and look what he understands. Things that'll take us a lifetime to understand. Sometimes there's this question or doubt, even, that is God partial to the pious people, or to the demigods, or to the devotees, or something like that. So he uses this expression of a desire tree. You offer your benedictions according to the levels of one's service, exactly as a desire tree delivers fruits according to one's desires. It makes no distinction between the higher and the lower. If there is actually a desire tree, it depends on what you desire. You can't blame the desire tree for your desire. And the desire tree delivers. So the Supreme Lord similarly acts like that. He's impartial. It looks like he's partial. He killed Hiranyakashipu, and he protected Prahlad. He's favoring Prahlad and disfavoring Hiranyakashipu. But it has to do with how Hiranyakashipu was regarding and how Prahlad is regarding. It's not like, okay, you're nice, so I'll embrace you, and you're not nice, so I'll kill you. Not friends, enemies. It's reciprocating with the regard. It's the desire tree metaphor. It's perfect metaphor. Someone may want to know, it's right within Prahlad's prayers, how to approach and serve. If this spiritualizing effect is so genuine, so real, so vital, how do you get into that realm of bhakti? Your servant Narada Muni kindly accepted me as his disciple and instructed me how to achieve this transcendental position. Therefore, my first duty is to serve him. You want to give me benedictions? Benedictions may distract me from my service to him. I don't want to get distracted from my service to him. How could I abandon his service? It's indirectly saying, please don't give some material benediction thing. I just want service to Narada, please. Then there's a couple of verses that are revealing Prahlad's understanding of the nature of Lord Nrisimhadev, and devotees that I know that are Nrisimha Bhaktas know this very well. This lesson is easy for them to understand and articulate and express because Lord Nrisimhadev is very kind to his devotees. Very kind to his devotees. So, two verses. My Lord, O unlimited reservoir of transcendental qualities, you have killed my father, Hiranyakashipu, and saved me from his sword. He said very angrily, if there is any supreme controller other than me, let him save you. I shall now sever your head from your body. Now, we didn't hear that dialogue earlier, but so it's not that there's an MP3 recording of the exchange between the two. He was giving us, Narada's giving summary of that exchange, and now we're getting another piece that we didn't know before. I will sever your head from your body. Let that Supreme Lord come and protect you now. So he did, to protect his devotee. Therefore, Prahlad says, I think that both in saving me and in killing him, you have acted just to prove true the words of your devotee. There's no other cause. This is his Bhaktavatsala. So the purport explains that Narada Muni, when Kayadu, pictured here, was in the ashram of Narada, we heard multiple times, Kayadu requested a benediction, and he gave more than one benediction. Her request was, my child not be born until my husband returns from his austerities in the forest. Granted. And Prahlad Maharaj will always be saved from his enemy's hands. There was a third one. He'll eliminate the Duskritis. So Narada uttered it, and Prahlad is saying, because Narada uttered it, you upheld it, because you're Bhaktivatsala. The killing of Hiranyakashipu and the saving of Prahlad were enacted simultaneously to prove the truthfulness of the Lord's devotee, Narada, and the fidelity of the Lord himself to his own purpose. That's, you know, I protect my devotee. I come in this world for that purpose. He came in this world for that purpose. Pritranaya saudanam vinashaya shaduskritam. He upholds his word simultaneously. And that's for the favor of the bhakta. The Lord acts only to satisfy the desires of his devotees. Otherwise, he has nothing to do. It's pleasure pastimes, as Prahlad said earlier. Here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explaining the same thing very eloquently. Since you are under the control of your devotee, your mercy to people simply follows the mercy of the devotee. You are not merciful to those who do not take shelter of the devotees. I am no exception. By the request of your devotee, you're merciful to all. And so, you're merciful to all because your devotee wants you to be merciful to everyone. That's Prahlad. You will hear it in his prayers. Please don't deliver just me, deliver everybody. I think you killed my father to make the words of Narada come true. When my mother prayed to Narada to give the blessing, your son will create good fortune by destroying the demons. That's the third benediction. He won't be harmed. He'll create good fortune by destroying the demons, and he won't be born before Hiranyakashipu comes back. I think you protected me, since my father, desiring to kill me, said, I will cut off your head. Just as you protected me from snakes and elephants, it was not possible for him to kill me by his hand. You killed him. Though the Lord is equal everywhere, he has the quality of being controlled by his devotee. That's Narada. Isn't that contradictory? Being controlled by Narada and being equal to all. And someone approaches me. You're my enemy. Oh, you'd like me to be your enemy? Okay, I'll be your enemy. You're my worshipful master. Oh, okay, I'll be your worshipful master. Yayatam mam prapadyante. He's equal, like the desire tree. And he's a person. And the devotee has affection and love for him. He has affection and love for his devotees. Completely natural. Completely natural. When he personally does something, it is only to satisfy his devotee. He very much favors his devoted servant, because that's his quality, bhaktavatsala. Nice little section. Very nice. Appropriately, it's in his prayers twice. A little bit of Lord Chaitanya is pictured here. Lord Chaitanya's achintya, beda, abeda tattva. Now, many of the devotees have heard this over and over again. There may be some newer people here who haven't heard it so many times. So I'll just quickly express. there's a non-different relationship between all things with the source of emanation. Just like the sun and the sunshine. The sunshine doesn't exist without the sun. The sun doesn't exist without the sunshine. They're inseparable. And there's a difference. The shine is not the source of all light. It's part of the light. So there's difference between that which is emanated and the source of emanation. Therefore, the Vedas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches, discloses the source of everything and the relationship of oneness and difference of all things with that source. So it's right within these two prayers. The first one is the non-difference, and the second one is the difference. It is not double talk. It's simultaneously one different. And there's this achintya term. Everything is one, the Supreme Lord, yet everything is separate from the Lord. So here's the oneness message. Actually, it's pretty long, so I'm not going to read it all. It's essentially saying everything is you. Some of you are familiar with the four essential verses of Srimad Bhagavatam called the Chatur Shloki. The Bhagavatam is 18,000 verses, and four of them are the essence of those 18,000 verses. Very important verses. Canto 2, Chapter 9, texts, I think it's 29, 32 to 35. Okay, great. So the first one is this one, Ahamivasamevagre, that says, in the beginning, it was only the Supreme Lord. During the period of cosmic manifestation, there's only the Supreme Lord. After cosmic annihilation, there's only the Supreme Lord. That's the oneness feature. That's what this is saying. It's you alone, everything. And then so at the same time, he's aloof. Like chapter 9, the first few verses of Bhagavad Gita. Chapter 9. I'm within everything and I'm outside of everything. He's aloof. My dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, the entire cosmic creation is caused by you, and the cosmic manifestation is an effect of your energy. Although the entire cosmos is but you alone, you keep yourself aloof from it. The conception of mine and yours is certainly a type of illusion, because everything is an emanation from you, and therefore not different from you. Indeed, the cosmic manifestation is non-different from you, and the annihilation is also caused by you. Oneness and difference. It's a big topic, and we're just doing a quick summary. It's a big and a deep and important topic. I'll say this, it justifies devotional service. If you don't have this, you can't justify devotional service, because there's this category and there's that category. Now, how do you engage something that's not in the category of transcendental in service of transcendental? Because it's connected to transcendental, although it's in this world of duality and temporary and not eternal. But it's connected. Long discussion. He uses the example, Prabhupada, in the purport, of this relationship between the seed and the tree. Actually, this is in the verse itself. Or the subtle cause and the gross manifestation. So the seed, here's pictures of some trees. Where did the tree come from? A seed. Where did the seed come from? A tree. So, you know, which comes first, the seed or the tree? Well, the seed of all existence is the Supreme Lord. And that leads to the next section. These topics are profound, and I, you know, just that one statement, you could speak for hours on that one statement, but I'm only doing a little summary of his prayers, which are very deep. He has realization of them, not just, you know, high school giving. He heard his teacher say, so he puts that on the answer in the exam, and he gets an A. He really doesn't understand any of it. He just knows how to say it. He has realization because of that realization has been imparted to him because of his devotion. So that seed, like there's an acorn and then the background is an oak tree. The oak tree manifests from the acorn and from the seed. And so not just forms of life or trees come from seeds, but the whole cosmic manifestation. The seed of the cosmos are these Vishnu tattva forms. And he goes through them one by one by one. He's a 5-year-old boy and he knows this because he heard it from Narada. He even discusses how Lord Brahma saw Garbhadakshay Vishnu. What did he look like? The method and what he looked like. And, you know, one of the Vishnu forms that's manifesting the cosmic creation. And this is our final little section. Seeing how we're doing on time. He's not for show, but because it's his character, he has deep humility. He has profound compassion and he has abundant knowledge and wisdom. So he gives an example. Here's Hayagriva, pictured on the right, giving transcendental knowledge to Lord Brahma. Now, how does he know about Hayagriva? Because that's, you know, way at the beginning of creation. He heard it from Narada, who heard it from Lord Brahma. So, my dear Lord, when you appeared as Hayagriva with the head of a horse, you killed the demons known as Madhu and Kaitaba, who were full of the mode of passion and ignorance. Then you delivered the Vedic knowledge to Lord Brahma. For this reason, all the great saints accept your forms as transcendental, untinged by material qualities. So he doesn't need to give examples, but he's giving an example that's displaying his knowledge of transcendence. He doesn't see the form of Lord Nrisingadev as material. He doesn't see the form of Hayagriva as material. He doesn't see forms of the Lord as material. They're all spiritual. Worthy of one's taking shelter. Therefore he takes shelter. And that's how his prayers conclude. We'll see when we get to the conclusion of his prayers. So as Hayagriva delivered with compassion transcendental knowledge back to the hands of Lord Brahma, what happened was, very, very early in the creation, Brahma was manifesting the Vedas through sound, and he became a little sleepy. And while he was dozing, Madhu and Kaitaba thought, now is our chance. We can go and steal the Vedas. And they stole the Vedas. Doesn't say what form the Vedas were in when they stole the Vedas, but they stole the Vedas and Brahma knew it. So Brahma went to Vishnu, help! These two terrible people, they have the Vedas. What are they going to do with the Vedas? Something bad because they're terrible people. They have no character. They have no business having this knowledge. Help! So he came. And he killed Madhu and Kaitava. He restored the Vedas back to Brahma. Probably told them, don't get drowsy again. Have another problem. So as he was merciful to Brahma, he knows the nature of Lord Nrisimhadeva. He is also very merciful, and he is going to want to give deliverance to Prahlad. But because of the reactions of our own past activities, we're suffering on this side of the river of material activity, material existence. Indeed, we have fallen into this river and are repeatedly suffering the pangs of birth and death and eating horrible things. He's speaking of himself as if he's a, you know, really low life person and a suffering person. He's not, but it's his natural humility. And he's describing the plight, not only of himself, but of persons of this world, just being victimized by the senses and being drawn and pulled. Doesn't show the verse, but just the image tells everything that's in the verse. And the poor fellow, it gives the example, like he's a 5-year-old boy, but the example of has many wives. And he comes home from work and they're all demanding attention, this sense, that sense, the other sense. Something for the tongue and something for the nose and something for the ear and something for the touch. Very bewildering. So, not just me, not only me, but all others who are suffering, kindly look compassionately upon us. Now, he's already done that with his classmates, but he's one person. He's not the Supreme Person, and he's appealing to the Supreme Person. He's an instrument of that compassion and mercy of the Supreme Person. He knows what it is, and he carries it, but he's nonetheless appealing to the Supreme Lord. Please bestow this upon not just me. Oh, best of the great personalities, I am not at all afraid of material existence, for whenever I stay, wherever I stay, I am fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. This is Prahlad, perfection through remembrance. Beautiful painting. Perfection through remembrance. He's not afraid. He's afraid of material existence. You already declared that. But he's not asking for some temporary thing. Rather, priyajanan anusevatam naha. He's praying to the Supreme Lord to deliver everyone. Oh, my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, original spiritual master of the entire world. What's the difficulty for you who manage the affairs of the universe in delivering the fallen souls engaged in your devotional service? You're the friend of suffering humanity. And for great personalities, it is necessary to show mercy to the foolish. Therefore, I think you will show your causeless mercy to persons like us who engage in your service. So the Sanskrit of the verse has a number of words, just glorifications. They're nice. Krishna is Akhila Guru. He's the spiritual master of the entire creation, which is true. He is Bhava Sambhava Lopa Heto. He manages the affairs of the entire universe. He is Atra Bandho, the friend of the suffering living entities. He is capable of giving shelter to everyone, just like he did lifting the Govardhan hill. The whole of Vrindavan fit under that hill. Our acharyas say by the touch of Krishna's hand, Govardhan became ecstatic and expanded, made room for everybody. Krishna extends this mercy and shelter through his devotees. This is Prabhupada's explanation. And here's this word, priya, janan, anusevatam naha. The Supreme Personality of God, it is very favorable to devotees who act according to the instructions of his pure devotee. And so the teaching is the same as Lord Chaitanya's teaching. Become the servant of the servants. Now the language is in Bengali in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Gopi Bharta Padakamalayora Dasa Dasa Anudas. And Prahlad's teachings are here in Sanskrit. But the teaching is the same. The teaching of the Bhagavatam, we covered this. I'm repeating it purposely. The teaching of Srimad Bhagavatam is the teaching of Lord Chaitanya. The teaching of Lord Chaitanya is the teaching of Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Chaitanya didn't go on a creative spree and just make up some nice teachings. It's the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam, he received, of course he's the personality of Godhead, but he received through his spiritual master who instructed him. It was a pastime. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So naturally, the message of Bhagavatam is going to be the same as his teachings. But when we carefully study both, we'll see. It's total symmetry. Become the servant of the servants. And now we know from Prahlad why. Because the Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, is especially kind upon his devotees. He's Bhakta Vatsala. You become dear to one of the Bhaktas, you're dear to the Supreme Lord. It's quite simple. We all know this teaching that Prabhupada gave. If you don't, I'll say it first time, but hearing it again and again is nice. One of the activities that Prabhupada did regularly, I mean practically daily, was he would go for morning walks. The history is when he had his two heart attacks crossing the ocean, and then later, after some time in New York, he had another heart attack. He was taken to the New Jersey shore, to some place where he could convalesce, and the doctor advised him, you have to exercise. You know, we all heard it, brisk walking. Anybody here not heard that one? I heard it just recently from a doctor that I was visiting for health reasons. Brisk walk every day. So Prabhupada started a brisk walk every day. And when he walked, it was a brisk walk. By stature, Prabhupada was short. And the Western devotees were tall. And to keep up with them, we had every third step had to run, practically. Or, like, walk fast and then, like, a running motion and then just to keep up, because he walked really fast. It was a brisk walk. Now I'm trying to remember the story that I was telling about his morning walk. Oh yeah. So one of the places he would walk in New York was in parks. And in parks, Let's turn the light on. Yeah, fantastic. Turn the light on. Yeah. In parks, early in the morning, because his morning walks were between 6 and 7. Because at 7 o'clock he would come back and greet the deities and then Guru Puja in class. So between 6 and 7, wealthy people would go for a walk in the park, and wealthy people often had dogs. They go for a walk in the park with their dog. So Prabhupada made this use of seeing that, saying, if you want to meet a wealthy person, just go make friends with his dog. Scratch the dog under the chin and you got made friends with the master. Then, because to try to make an appointment with a big guy, who knows, you may never get the appointment because so many people you have to know that know the people that know the people to get the secretary to say you can have an appointment. But he just, you know, pat the dog on the head and scratch the dog under the chin. You've made friends with the big man. Similarly, Krishna is the big man. And you become dear to one who is dear to him, and you're dear to the big man. You're dear to Krishna. Become dear to someone who is dear to Krishna. Become the servant of the servants. Because Krishna is Bhakta Vatsala. So Prahlada is saying, I know you'll be kind to us. I'm not, he's appealing, at the same time he's confident. When you have confidence, it doesn't mean you don't have to be enthusiastic anymore. Or you don't have to endeavor anymore. We endeavor. We appeal for mercy to Krishna. And to our founder Acharya, who is by nature merciful. But we appeal anyway. Just like a child that's affectionate with their mother and father. They exchange affection. Not because, you know, anyway, because it's natural. It was right at Newark Airport. I saw something that was quite astounding. So I'll just repeat it. This display of affection. There was a teenage boy who was dressed like a, you know, a modern teenage boy without the detail, and his mother. And, you know, the bags were taking forever to come out. So he just looked at his mom, reached like that. Mom held her arms up and they just embraced. You know, and they just held each other. And he was smiling and she was smiling. It was real affection. It wasn't, you know, he wanted a piece of candy or something. It was real affection. Some conversation, but it was just so. Although there was real affection, it can be displayed by this warm embrace or some other way. So the love that we have, the love that Prahlad has for Narada, he's expressing it. The love that we may have for our founder Acharya. And what we've received, how our lives have been, and are the persons who have helped us in the path of bhakti, and so forth, and the Vaishnav community, and our, you know, our cooks, and the deity worshippers, and the people that are doing things that we don't have to do, but it's helping to create a spiritual atmosphere. It's wonderful. And it's very, very helpful and nourishing for our Krishna consciousness. And most important is we have to be, you know, good examples of Krishna consciousness so we can contribute to that good atmosphere and set a good example. Okay, so I'm going to end. We're supposed to wind up, I think, at 8 o'clock. Do we have a microphone for those that might want to have a question? Any comments or questions? Back there, raise your hand again. We've got a little piece of paper that says there's going to be a kirtan, a youth kirtan at 8 o'clock. Stick around if you want. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, giving the wonderful lecture. But I have one question. You already mentioned...
You have, this is a tricky microphone. You have to hold it like it's ice cream.
Yes.
Okay.
You, from Gita, you already just mentioned that Krishna is everywhere, but aloof from everything. So can you explain about this a little bit more?
Can I explain about... I didn't catch everything. He is aloof. Doesn't mean he doesn't care. Aloof means he's not micromanaging. He's doing through his potencies. He expands himself as Paramatma, and Paramatma takes charge. And Krishna is in Goloka Vrindavan, engaging his pastimes in Goloka Vrindavan. In that sense, aloof. Your question is wonderful. I'll maybe over-answer your question. Are you familiar with Jiva Goswami?
Yes.
No, little bit.
I heard it.
Little bit.
Yes.
He wrote, one of his three commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam is six in number by topic. And one of those six is Paramatma Sandarbha. He explains Paramatma Sandarbha is Vishnu Tattva in the category, but he does not exhibit everything that Krishna in Vrindavan exhibits. Rather, the lesser quantity of the qualities of Krishna that he exhibits are focused upon dealing with the material nature. Okay. And Krishna is aloof. But Krishna's really hands-on when it comes to Paramatma feature, not a blade of grass moves. That's micromanaging. Okay. But Krishna is aloof. The source of everything is Krishna.
Yeah.
And he's not got a switchboard with all this, you know, information technology sending him signals all every millisecond of what's going on in the material world. And he's, you know, distracted by that. That's super soul. In service to Krishna. And Krishna's within everything and outside of everything. To get more detail on this, read those verses from chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita, whatever it is, 3 through 5 or 3 through 6, something like that.
Okay.
It describes this. Okay. And Krishna calls it his Yogam Aishwaryam, his mystic opulence. He does things through his energies, and he's aloof. Prabhupada gives this simple example. A big businessman is off on the golf course, hitting this little white ball. The whole factory is running on his energy. He's off in the golf course. He's aloof. But, you know, if they give him a call, you know, should we order $5 million worth of that stuff? Cause we got this. So things are happening, but he's aloof.
When Dapar Yuga, Krishna came here, he's not aloof there at that time, right? He was not aloof that time.
Why you say? Why do you say that? Krishna came in Dwarapa Yuga, and you know the forms of the Lord come in different yugas. Yes. But he's not micromanaging the affairs as Paramatma is. I'm using this word micromanaging. He's a loop. It's his energies that are acting on his behalf. Parasya shaktir vivadaiva shruyate so bhavaki ganak balakriyacha. He doesn't have to lift a pinky. He could lift Govardhan Hill without lifting Govardhan Hill. Through his potencies. He can create as many Govardhan Hills as he likes without any effort. And then destroy them all. Or whatever, you know, he can do whatever he likes. Without having to do anything. Because his energies do everything. Yes. The whole of creation. The whole cosmic manifestation doesn't do anything. He just has a desire. And Ramadevi takes care of everything.
Okay.
And her expansions.
Okay.
And he can come. But when he comes, it's past time. It's not like he's tied up doing things. It's pleasure past, exactly what Prahlad is saying here. It's pleasure pastime. He doesn't have to do anything. The thing he likes to do is reciprocate with his devotee. So he does things to reciprocate with his devotee. That's what he likes to do. Loving exchange. Nice question.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you. Maharaj over here has got his hand up.
Just this is a reminding about Prahlad Maharaj. This is from Mukundamala Stotra.
Ah.
The first prayer, it is called, O Mukunda, my Lord, please let me become a constant reciter of your names, addressing you as a Sri Vallabha. You is very dear to Lakshmi. Varada, the bestower of benediction. Dayapara, you is causelessly merciful. Bhakta Priya, you is very dear to his devotees. Bhavaluntana Kovida, he was expert at plundering the status quo of repetition of birth and death. Nada, the Supreme Lord. Jagannivasa, the resort of the cosmos. The Nagashayana, the Lord who lies down on the serpent bed. So Prabhupada wrote 10 pages of purport on this prayer. Just to reminding about Prahlad Maharaj, what Prabhupada says, just 2 minutes it is here. The Lord is therefore next addressed as the Bhakta Priya, meaning he was very dear to his devotees, or he was very affectionate to his devotees. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 39, the Lord very nicely describes his sublime and transcendental affection for his devotees. There the Lord declares that although he is undoubtedly equal, kind all living beings, because all of them are part and parcel of him, are his spiritual sons, those who are especially attached to him by love and affection, who regards nothing dear than him, are particularly dear to him. So Prabhupada explaining here further, an example of such a pure devotee is Lord Jesus Christ and Prahlad Maharaj. Similarly, when Haridas Thakur was told to give up chanting the holy name of the Lord, he refused to do so, with the result that he was flagged into 22 marketplaces. And Prahlad Maharaja persisted in disagreeing with his father, the great atheist Hiranyakashipu, thus voluntarily accepted the cruelty his father's inflicted upon him. These are some of the examples of the renowned devotees of the Lord, and we should simply try to understand how dear such devotees are to him. Just this is from Mukundamala, prayers of King Kulashekara. Hare Krishna.
Thank you. We have 5 minutes. I knew you'd have your hand up. You have only 2 questions, right? He doesn't need a microphone. He's powerful. But? Speak for yourself. Okay. Then you're a businessman. You're not a bhakta. Or a mixed bhakta at best. It's right in Palaj prayers. Listen tomorrow morning. If you can't come because you're busy. Tomorrow morning. It's right in Prahlad's prayers, chapter 10. It's right there. So, become, you know, take shelter of Prahlad and Prahlad's teaching. Taking shelter of his teachings means taking shelter of him. So, hear and remember and chant and pray and take shelter. That, then you can go beyond the what you just described to the other position. It's how we develop qualities. Association. Okay, we're done? Your friend. You have any questions this evening? Not many. Okay. There we go, back there. Yes, go ahead, just start.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Dandavat Pranam. One question, based on the slide that I'm seeing, what symptoms one exhibits in order for that person to know that he is executing his duties in the mode of being a servant of a servant?
What are the ingredients in becoming a servant of the servant? Is that your question? Symptoms.
Symptoms. What are the symptoms of one being, one having the mood of being a servant of a servant?
Well, humility. That's it. Beginning. The interest is the other should be pleased. Knowing that when the other is pleased, Krishna is pleased. So, I have my interests. And a spiritual interest is the interest of seeing the other party being pleased. No, the other party being pleased doesn't mean just on the material platform, it may very well mean on the spiritual platform. So, you know, the deeper sense of the person being pleased. So that requires then some transcendental knowledge from spiritual authorities that say, this is going to make the other person pleased. Not just, you know, scratch my back. Okay, now you're pleased. You don't understand what I'm saying. It's not just the material sense of pleasing the other person, but with a spiritual conception. So it requires sound vibration descending into our lives and then let's just say our founder Acharya. What was his intention? What did he really want? What was really important to him? And he said a number of things that were important to him. And so when we know those things, and especially the ones that were said again and again, someone take that microphone away. Thank you. Especially those things he said again and again, we let that go into our heart and we go there to do that. That's being the servant of the servant. Now there are other persons who are servants of Srila Prabhupada, and let me see those who are doing that which I know Srila Prabhupada wanted. Let me assist them in doing that which I know Srila Prabhupada wanted. You know, that's now in ISKCON context, because he's our founder Acharya, the father or the grandfather or the primary Shiksha Guru for us all. So what's a shiksha? What did he want? What instruction did he give again and again? And let me do that for his pleasure. That's the servant of the servant. So, book distribution, for example. I'm, you know, a small guy. What can I do? But let me help, at least help those that are doing, and, you know, I can lift. Many hands make light work and all of that. As an example, servant of the servant. Although it's the activity is something, the purpose is pleasing the servant of the servant, acting for that purpose, whatever my capabilities permit, and so on. Those are some examples, but the principle is humility and my self-identity. It's not for my pleasure. I'm the servant of the servant. Okay, we'll end. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.